okay. One of my little pet peeve things that I wanted to start here at the podcast. And you know, these can be looked at as like cautionary tales. This is like, this is something bad that happened to me that I didn't like that maybe you can avoid by hearing the story. So you ever going to sit down, you know, in your living room and you sit down on some remote controls? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That'll wake you the fuck. That's a reality check right there. You're like, what the fuck? Now, I did that yesterday, and it was luckily it wasn't like an Xbox controller. Those will let you know what's going on. Yeah, hello.
Can you hear me?
Let's see here. Do a little
sure before we get too far in here. There we go. All
yeah,
right.
Yeah, boy. Velvety smooth voice there.
Nice.
I was getting ready to watch a movie in my bedroom because the TV in there is better than the one out here. And I've got like it's kind of like a single chair little futon thing or whatever. But it's solid black. And yeah. My remotes for my TV and the sound bar in my bedroom are black. So I just set them there. But then I walked away and came back and just sat down.
Yeah.
And I just hear a crunch.
And they just camouflage themselves.
Yes.
In. Yeah.
Yeah. I heard a crunch. Luckily, it wasn't my hip or anything. it was one of the remotes, which a little wonky now, but it's no big deal. It's a first world problem. But so the culprit, I mean, obviously is me. It's like, so it made me think, a similar situation with you? You've got four children, young, and some of them are Lego enthusiasts. This is what I hear parents have gone through, stepping on like barefoot on Legos.
Oh, it hurts like a son of a bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't done that yet.
They also are super great at losing remotes. And yeah. One of the things that used to bother people will be watching TV and, we usually have like a couple DirecTV remotes just because somebody loses one. We have like a spare usually, yeah. And they both are programmed. But we've had things where remotes get stuck between the seat cushions and the sides,
yeah,
and stuff sometimes. Or the dog would used to lay on the remote or something. You'd just be whatever, and all of a sudden the channel or whatever things would just start changing, or like the TV would just start flipping through channel, flip, and you're like, what the is going on? So everybody's like looking around for reaching in seat cushions or whatever, and sometimes the dog was just laying on the remote, just looking at everybody like, what is everybody's problem?
What's everybody all in commotion for?
He's ordering pay-per-view porn, and we're all like scrambling.
Yeah, unwittingly, yeah. Yeah, the remote thing. And then it makes you think of like, are we not in 2023? Shouldn't everything just be coming from one? Because I do have like three fucking remotes in my bedroom. It's a couple out here. And then I was thinking that one that I thought it's kind of busted. It's not too bad, but like I was like, you know, that sucks. Like, what am I going to? It's for my sound bar. That's like, do I order a new one if it's not too expensive? Maybe replace it. But it's not too bad actually. But then I was thinking, yeah, shouldn't all this shit be on my phone? Shouldn't all remote like shouldn't my phone be able to access all my, you know, because I can remotely connect my phone to this little stereo out here.
Yeah, yeah.
And but shouldn't that like extend to all?
Yeah, I think you could download apps like I think Samsung has them to where you can.
Right.
It's like a remote on your phone or whatever. I hear various things, good and bad.
Yeah,
about
I know.
How those
right.
Work,
the technology is not that great.
Yeah.
Yet. Yeah. But. We'll get it started here. So that was my airing a grievance, but it was towards myself. I was gonna ask you. It's like, who do you think the culprit is? Like, here's a hint. I live by myself. Yeah, that's the thing is when like I gotta stay honest. I gotta have pet peeves against myself just to be fair. So we'll get it started here. So this is Mind Grenade episode 354. We are your hosts. I'm Hector.
I'm Jason. Mind Grenade is a pop culture based show that dives into TV, movies, music, comics, and a whole lot more.
Oh yes. So we'll let's see. So for this episode, we're gonna do some Crossing the Streams, which is our recommendation segment, and I'm sure we've got plenty of stuff that we can touch on there. But before we get started, I wanted to ask you, Jason. I don't know if I've asked you this before in the podcast. This is usually a question I ask whenever I have musicians on, guests and stuff that are musicians. But I thought it's such a great question because, like, the reason I think it's a great question because it fosters conversation, which is what you need on a podcast. You need to come up with, like, conversations that'll then – I'm sorry, questions that'll then just, you know, make up 20 minutes, 30 – however much more time for the podcast for content. And I think it's crazy if I haven't asked you this because you're a voracious music fan. Like, you're always listening to music. What is it? Megadeth, Train of Consequences. That's a good song, right? Yeah. I'm just the train outside is making it into the podcast. Megadeth is a great metal band, and I'm thinking you'll probably answer this with a metal band for one of your two bands. So the question is, favorite band, two of them, your favorite band that broke, that became big prior to you being born, and then your favorite band after. So usually the after is your favorite, like, people's favorite bands are usually ones that they discovered when they were teenagers, just like coming online, music, you know, with tastes and stuff. For me, it's Pink Floyd and Radiohead. Pink Floyd were big before I was born, and then Radiohead broke in the 90s, in the mid-90s, when I was a teenager. And but for you, I don't know if we've ever officially talked about this or brought it up on the podcast for you, so I'll let you answer.
That's an interesting question for me to answer because I feel like my fanhood is constantly evolving. And certain bands do survive a long time, but my some bands that I were big fans of during like a five-year span, sometimes like I'm like, well, I don't dislike that band anymore, but I'm not like a big active fan of that band anymore. So I got to think of a band that previous to Unborn that I still do listen to, or an artist, I should say, that I still listen to prior to when I was born. And then also now, I think now is pretty easy. I think at one point that answer would have been easy Green Day, but I feel like Avenged Sevenfold has surpassed Green Day now. And the reason I say that isn't because I put a lot of thought into it. It's because I look at my tendencies of what I'm listening to. And I go back and I listen to Avenged Sevenfold more than I do Green Day now. So as of right now, Avenged Sevenfold would be number one, and Offspring, Green Day probably tied for number two, as bands that broke after I was born. And as a matter of fact, I just went and saw an Avenged Sevenfold concert not that long ago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So, Falling in Reverse and, what's the other name of the other band? I had never even heard of them before until they were like the opener. Kim Dracula.
Kim Dracula. Name.
So yeah. I think the band's from, at least the singer's from Australia, and I think he broke, so to speak, because he did, a metal cover of Lady Gaga Paparazzi.
Oh, yeah.
Kim Dracula is like if Korn was playing pop music.
Huh. Okay.
It's the best way I can describe him. So it's like a new metal take on pop sounds, almost.
Okay.
Their covers and their, you know, they do a lot of pop covers in new metal style, but also they kind of write music in that and kind of that way too. So they're very unique.
Okay. That was the first time you heard of them.
Yes. I wasn't even aware of that cover, but they were entertaining for sure. They were, it was very unique. I was like, oh, I've never heard some of this stuff before. Mm-hmm. So, so that was interesting. So, not to get too off topic. So before I was born, that's tough. You know, Pink Floyd would be up there for me as well.
Boyster Cult,
Tom Petty, Huey Lewis and the News.
Yeah, nice.
Those are off the top of my head. are going to be big competitors. I mean, boy, it's hard to beat Pink Floyd because they're such unique, innovative musicians of their time.
Yeah.
The time before my time. Tom Petty has always been a musician of mine that I regret not seeing live. And of course we know he passed away
right
due to I think accidental overdose
right
but I had a chance to go see him in college, and I passed both time and financially. I was I don't think that'll work for now. I'll see him at another point, right, and I never did.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of regret there. But I've been a Tom Petty fan since junior high, maybe.
Yeah. So he's one of those musicians for me growing up here in the Midwest, where it is a combination of, like, that's what was playing when I was growing up, but also I was actively listening to it. I was going out of my way to buy the albums, and I did go see him in concert. This was like in 98, I think, or something like that, and it was in St. Louis, and he sounded exactly like what you would hope for. Like, I was like, holy shit, that's Tom, but like, even if I was blindfolded, I was like, Tom Petty's somewhere nearby. Like, it was awesome. And then also, of course, the anytime there's a marijuana reference, a cloud of smoke would appear out of nowhere.
Speaking of, Snoop Dogg apparently stopped smoking weed. Did you see that news?
Yeah.
Isn't it hilarious that there's a person out there where when they stop smoking weed, it's big news?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's like such a part of his persona. Yeah. And if Willie Nelson does the same, it's going to be just as big as news. Yeah, the end times. That ain't going to happen, though.
The end times, yeah. That would be crazy if he, what's his name? Woody Harrelson gave up.
Yeah, marijuana. Yep.
I
remember that now, yeah.
He was, like, a big advocate. Like, he was smoking all the time, just kind of like Snoop or Willie Nelson. For me, those old British bands, Pink Floyd, Zeppelin, the Beatles, some of these big bands that broke before I was born, those kind of inform the bands I like after the Radioheads and bands like that, and Soundgarden.
I've always had a soft place in my heart for REO Speedwagon, which is a kind of a local band.
Yeah.
For us being here in the downstate Illinois, so that's yeah, they're not a type of music that I listen to commonly, but I appreciate them for what they are, which is a pretty damn good band. Like,
yeah,
they put out quite a few hits. And we talk about, like, Tom Petty and even Huey Lewis in the News. Yeah. They've got a lot of songs on the radio.
Yeah.
Tons of them. But I think for some people, like, they don't realize, you go into their albums, there's a lot more to be had there for both of those guys.
Yeah.
There's a lot more good music on
it's
those albums.
It's not all just like watered down pop music that's on the radio. There's more to them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bands like that it seems like from the 80s, like the Police are that way. People know, or even, and I'm not a huge Bruce Springsteen fan, but like it's hard not to hear Bruce Springsteen songs growing up because there were a lot of them on the radio. But the bands like that shouldn't be discounted because they're on the radio, because if you do dig through their albums, there is quality music there that didn't make it onto the radio. I was thinking about that the other day. Yeah, like Huey Lewis is a great example. There's so many big hits on the radio, but that doesn't mean that those are their only good songs. There's plenty that they did. And Huey Lewis seems like one of those bands that influence a lot of their contemporaries.
Mm-hmm.
And then future bands.
They had a unique sound. Mm-hmm. They didn't necessarily sound like everyone else that was on the radio at the time. And he utilized, you know, horn music and things like different styles and aspects that weren't just straightforward classic rock that some of the other bands were utilizing. So
So, I don't know. I was going to try to guess your favorite. Blue Easter Cult, definitely, I knew would be brought up, and Green Day and Offspring. Green Day and Offspring, like, those are formidable bands of that era. I asked somebody this question the other day, and they brought up Nine Inch Nails, and I was like, can't argue with that. Like, you know, Nine Inch Nails from that era, like, those are bands that loomed large in that era, and still are being spoken about. All right, so we're gonna get into our crossing the streams. And I'll start out, and then we'll just kind of go back and forth. I'll do one, you do one, and we'll see how this goes. So our Crossing the Stream segment, like I said earlier, is is our recommendation. So this is anything you can find on the streaming platforms, on Apple Music. It could be music on Spotify, Comixology, the comic comics app that I've been using now, I guess is going to get combined with Kindle. Amazon's kind of shuffling some stuff around there, so I'll have to wait and see how that works out.
Yeah, podcasts.
Yes, podcast recommendations for sure. Yeah, there's some good ones out there. So I'm going to start out with a Netflix movie that just dropped that I briefly talked about on the last podcast we did, which is David Fincher's The Killer. And this kind of fits into the streaming platform for movies and TV shows, but also for Comixology. The Killer is based on a graphic novel, a French graphic novel. And French graphic novels are called bande dessinée. It's a little bit of French that I know. And the graphic novel, I had started reading it months ago when I found out that David Fincher was putting out this movie. And this movie stars Michael Fassbender, who I'm a big fan of. Michael Fassbender of Inglourious Basterds and the X-Men movies. And he's been in a bunch of other stuff. He was in Prometheus. And, he's a great Irish actor, I think, is his background. Reading the comics were great. It's kind of like a series where you read chapters of it, long chapters, and you just keep turning the page and going along this journey with this assassin, this like hitman, and in the movie played by Michael Fassbender. And it's all about it's kind of like a character study. And how this guy just like purges all like empathy and like purposefully just so he can be the most effective. And the movie starts out that way, just showing his process and stuff. And one of the things that I like that David Fincher did for the movie was focus on like subjectivity. So it's like everything's like aggressively from his point of view. When he puts earbuds in, then you start hearing it from his point of view. But then when the camera turns away, then it mutes that noise from his earbuds. Like little tricks like that just to really put you in his point of view. And the approach that David Fincher takes, it's very interesting in that regard. Really smartly put together. Have you watched this, Jason? Have you watched The Killer yet?
I have, yeah.
Did you? Okay, cool, cool. I'm super interested to hear, because I had my first impression during watching it, and then the 24 hours afterwards, then I started formulating a better kind of opinion on the movie. The movie looks like most David Fincher movies. David Fincher did Fight Club, Zodiac, Seven, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. He's done a bunch of movies. So his cinematography is very specific and it has the same kind of color tones, like just very film noir, like really dark.
Yeah.
Not a Disney Happily Ever After type movie.
No.
It's very much just what I'm describing. It's just about a killer. Mm-hmm. And something happens at the beginning of the movie that kind of sets off the events of the rest of the movie. And really, there's really points in the movie that really stand out. But most of it, it's just showing his pragmatism, like how he just tries to just be methodical in his approach to the life he decided to lead. Really enjoyed this. I'm going to continue because I read a lot of the comic, but it goes on for quite a while. And I feel that the movie captured the graphic novel pretty well, I thought. Just the making him kind of like a blank slate almost to the rest of the world. Like, if you would see this guy walking on the street, you wouldn't think twice. You would forget him like minutes later. Like, they did that really well in the movie. The it's easier in the comic because you're just drawing like a nondescript kind of white dude just walking around with a touristy looking clothes on or whatever, but then it shows his like inner monologue in the comic, so you know he's not a good guy. That was cool too, is you kind of like, am I on this guy's side? He's the protagonist of the story, but he's also a heartless killer. Not entirely heartless. There's a little bit of in the darkness, but so yeah, those are my thoughts. I'll let you.
So I do think there'll be people that watch The Killer and not care for it as much as normal, because I think they'll have the wrong idea of what they're watching.
Yeah.
And the fact that The Killer is a movie about an assassin that has some of the same plot points that we've seen movies with assassins have before, where something goes wrong, they have to either correct it or reconcile with it, or things turn on them, that kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen all that before. And maybe if that's all somebody is thinking this movie is, it may not deliver enough for them to where they don't understand, like, well, that was all right. But but really, the movie isn't about its basic plot. The movie is about him.
Yeah.
The movie is about you as the viewer following his mental state through this whole thing. It's about being able to be inside of an assassin's mind and him reconciling with his own choices, reconciling with his own decisions and the fallout they may have on people that he actually cares about, that kind of stuff. So really, I mean, this movie is more about the narration verbiage than it is about the visuals. And so some people will appreciate that more, but I mean, it's well done.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's well done. But I do think that if somebody's going in there looking for shoot 'em up action, that's not what this movie is about at all.
No.
So, I would say if you're going to watch this movie, don't go in there with that mindset. Go in there with more of a cinematic mindset of watching the arc of a character or, the mind of a character.
Yeah.
That's what this movie is about. It's not about the underlying plot. It's about him as a person. So,
yeah.
And with that being in mind, it's pretty darn good. And it does a good job of that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I 100% agree. Because, yes, and you made me think of the movie Drive with Ryan Gosling, where, like, that movie, if you're thinking that's a Fast and the Furious kind of, like, action movie, you're super wrong. Like, it's not that at all. It's a whole different kind of artsy kind of film. If you think it's going to be something else, then that can throw you off if you're sitting down for thinking it's going to be one thing and it's something else. But if you go in knowing that it's more of a character study, then I feel like you'll really enjoy it. There is, in this, in The Killer, there is one big action sequence in the middle of it that's pretty over the top and awesome, actually, I thought. Big action sequence. Then there's also Tilda Swinton's in this, and I really enjoyed that scene with her that Michael Fassbender has with her in a restaurant.
I was surprised to see her. I didn't realize she was in this movie.
Yeah, that was really good. That has no action in it, but it was really a highlight of the movie. I mean, just knowing that it's a David Fincher movie should kind of give you an idea of what type of movie, because his, Seven or Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, like, those are more about the characters than, you know, than what the characters are going through, than what's, like, giant action sequences are set up or whatever. So The Killer on Netflix, I specifically subscribe to Netflix again for that, and I have a feeling I'm going to watch this again, just because the narration, especially early on, was really strong. I want to go back and capture more of
it. And when you go to watch this movie, that first 10 minutes of the narration might be some of the strongest part of the movie.
Yeah.
So when you, if you go to watch The Killer, like really sit down and pay attention, because that first 10 minutes of dialogue is super strong and well written.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, definitely don't just watch. You need to listen to this movie as well. And
it reminded me of like dialogue from Fight Club, where it's just like really strong, really well written dialogue and well executed by the actor. But yeah, great stuff. So, what did I give this movie? I think I gave it a B+. It, I like to watch it again to see if my grade goes up or down for it. I'll let you go next, Jason.
I guess I'll change it up completely. And well, since I mentioned a podcast, I'll do a podcast. So, this is something I've been secretly wanting for years, and I had no idea it was in the works. It was happening until the first episode dropped, and I was like, "What the?" Daniel Tosh has a podcast.
Oh
now.
Yes, yeah, I haven't listened to
and
it.
And I
yet,
did not know that was coming.
Yeah,
it is very much him, and I listened to the first episode. You know, when you have a little bit of star power like he does, you think, you know, the first episode, if you're going to have guests on, a name like his, you know, it's like, oh, I'll grab another big name comedian or I'll grab this or that. But since it's Daniel Tosh, his first guest is his wife's OBGYN.
Mm. Yeah.
And it is hilarious.
Yeah.
It is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, I was curious, very curious. And I was like, oh, he's going to be an interviewer type in this podcast. What is that going to seem like? Is he going to do a good job? And he did. He absolutely did. He did it in his style, which I think, I mean, I'm sure like when a doctor comes onto this podcast, they know what they're in for with him. Cause he knows, I mean, this guy knows Daniel personally from delivering kids. So, you know, he knew what was going on when he got on this podcast, and Daniel, it was as respectful as Daniel could be by also being him while I was interviewing, which so I thought it was, he provided a good balance. If somebody doesn't know him, you go on there and be like, oh God, if you're like the political correct police, you can't listen to Daniel Tosh. His comedy, he says things that are very tongue in cheek all the time. So you can't take everything he says for fact or seriously. Like, and his tonal voice stuff, you can tell when he's saying something tongue in cheek and when he's being actually, so like pay attention to that. And he's like, to me, like, I don't think there's anybody better that does the tongue in cheek, verbiage than Daniel Tosh. Like, he does that super well. Mm-hmm. He says things that, you know, he doesn't mean, but he's like, it's satire and commentary is what he does sometimes. And he does it super well. He's just, I'm trying to think of some of the examples. So his OBGYN is a gay man, and he goes, and he made a comment to him, and he goes, does your husband appreciate that you don't take your work home with you? That kind of stuff. And like, he played along. He was super good. The guy that he interviewed was super great on this podcast to play along with everything. He asked him, you know, if he's like, oh, do you want children of his own? And he's like, oh, and he's like, no, I don't want children. Like, oh, well, he's like, well, that's very Republican of you. Did you care about the kid in the womb? But once he gets out, he's on his own.
Nice.
So, you know, and Daniel Tosh, far as if whatever, it's kind of like South Park in a way. He is, doesn't matter what politics or affiliation or your viewpoints, whatever.
Yeah.
He's going after everything.
If there's a good joke in there.
Yeah, he's going after everything and everybody. And I think that's how I like that style.
Yeah.
Where
you don't
have tendencies to go after sides.
I'm sure in his private life, he has his own opinions, but really when it comes to the comedy, a good joke's a good joke. And everybody should be, if he's making fun of this group or that group, I mean, as long as he's fair, and he is, he's very sharp too. He's very quick and gets a lot of praise by his contemporaries, by his fellow comedians out there. And it is crazy that it took this long for him to have a podcast. What I like about his approach on guests is that now he doesn't have to necessarily He doesn't have to necessarily have, other comedians or celebrities on. He can have anybody on, like anybody in his life.
Yeah. He had a doctor on and made a hilarious 45-minute show out of it. So, it's pretty good. So, I feel like I'm looking forward. I don't know who the next, how the next episode's going to be or who he's going to have on or whatever, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what's.
How did you find out about it? Did it just pop up on your algorithm?
Yeah, I don't remember if it, I saw something somewhere. I was like, what?
I saw it too somewhere too. I can't even think of it. It was a YouTube kind of ad or something like that.
And he immediately started poking fun at himself in his podcast where he's like, well, this is the Tosh Show, not Tosh.0. He goes, yeah, it sounds similar. We did that on purpose to make it confusing.
Nice. Yeah, he's very self-aware.
Yeah.
And no, but yes, I like that in his comedy, everything and everyone's fair game. Like that I really appreciate with like people like the guys from South Park. All right. So, yeah, I love a good podcast recommendation. Back to Netflix, Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. So, this one I knew was coming, but it kind of, surprised me. I didn't know it was coming this soon. And it's the, Netflix animated series, Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. And it's based on a Brian Lee O'Malley's comic book from, the early 2000s. And, obviously there was a movie with Michael Cera and, Mary Elizabeth Winstead and a bunch of actors that were like, there's some big A-list actors that went on to become MCU stars and stuff. Yeah. Chris Evans was in this movie. Brie Larson. What's cool about this animated series is that they brought back the entire voice cast from the movie. So
I noticed that because I did a little preview of it where, you can go over the tile and you can kind of listen and watch a little bit of it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, those are all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I recognized all the voices. I was like
almost all 99% of them. I think Bill Hader as the narrator is the only person who didn't make it onto this. I did watch the first episode. This is like with The Killer and then this and then something else I'm going to talk about, on this episode in a little bit. It has to be my age where like it feels like I'm being catered to with all the entertainment, like a lot of entertainment. I'm like, are they making this for me specifically? This is kind of crazy. I appreciate it. This Scott Pilgrim, it's feels that way because I'm a huge fan of the comic. I'm a huge fan of that movie. Edgar Wright did the movie. I'm a huge Edgar Wright fan. He does a cameo in this. I haven't seen him yet because I've only watched the first episode, but Edgar Wright has a cameo in this and his character's name in this is called Edgar Wrong.
That's
instead
nice.
Of Edgar Wright. I was nice. Like, oh, that's pretty clever. So, and I think Nick Frost and, what's the guy, Shaun of the Dead, Simon Pegg. Oh, good Lord. So Simon Pegg and Nick Frost also have a cameo in this. So you got the guys that did Shaun of the Dead making a cameo on Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. So the main thing that I'm enjoying from this animated series is that it's a very anime approach to it. It's an Japanese anime studio that's producing the animation for it.
Okay.
And if you go on the Wikipedia page, it has the voice cast, but it has like a section for the Japanese voice cast and the American voice cast. It comes off that way when you're listening to it and the style of it, like when you're watching it. The way the voice, because I watched it in the English speaking American actors, and it feels like an anime from the 2000s, like just the way the audio is coming in and the way the animation is being laid out has a very early 2000s anime vibe to the entire thing. But like, deliberately, like they went out of their way to make it feel that way. And, I really appreciate that. The artwork looks a lot like, Brian Lee O'Malley's artwork. There's a great music design in it as well. The choices in music, when the movie came out, Brie Larson's character was a rock star in the movie. She played Envy Adams, I think, and she had a band in the story, and in the movie, Brie Larson played her. And the song that Brie Larson plays on stage in the movie was a Metric song. I cannot think of the Metric song right now. And Metric's one of my favorite bands, a Canadian band, indie band. Apparently, Metric is also going to have a cameo in this series, the animated series as well. So they're bringing really good music into this. The pop culture references in this, it's a main part of this series. The pop culture references. It was in the comic, in the movie. The references to video games, to anime, to all kinds of stuff. So far with the first episode, I don't feel like they've overdone it. Like, sometimes a Joss Whedon movie will overdo the references, or a Joss Whedon show like Buffy or Firefly or whatever. Yeah. We'll kind of overdo it with the pop culture references. It's like, oh, look, hey, you get this, don't you? With this, it seems like they got the appropriate amount.
Balance,
and, yeah. Yes, and so I appreciate that too. Are you interested at all in watching them?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I kind of toddled over and watched a little bit of the preview, like episode snippet. I was definitely thinking about it. I've got some other stuff I'm watching right now, but then I might reel back to it.
What are your thoughts on the film, the Edgar Wright movie? Did you like that when?
Yeah,
that came
I
out?
Did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which is what attracted me to kind of check out to see. Get a feel of what the animated series look like.
Yeah, if you like the movie, you're gonna like this. I feel if anyone listening, it's Brian Lee O'Malley, the creator. He's involved in the production of it, just how he was in the movie and stuff. So, okay. Pretty excited for that. And that again is on Netflix, and there's 8 episodes of that. So,
okay,
I'll be watching them week to week. So, I'll let you go ahead there, Jason.
Okay, get some back burner stuff out of the way, I guess.
Yeah.
I finished Only Murders of the Building season 3 a while back. And I'm going to be honest with you, at first I wasn't for sure if season 3 was going to be a step back. I remember feeling that in the first 2 episodes. But now I'm sure it's not. Now that I've watched the whole thing. Maybe a few more twists and turns than really necessary writing this season. But I another solid season overall. Like it's if it's not as good as the first 2 seasons, it's pretty close. This show, you know, it's a show about murder.
Yeah.
And it's a show about podcasting about murder, and people get killed during the show, and yet it never ceases to be fun.
Huh. Wow.
So it's interesting, and I never cease to be amazed with the amount of charisma that Martin Short brings his character.
Huh. Okay,
it's crazy. Like I'm fascinated watch him portray his character. The amount of energy that Martin Short puts into his character in this series is just phenomenal to me. It's crazy. Like I really really enjoy his character, and not that Steve Martin and Selena Gomez aren't good, and I feel like Selena Gomez keeps getting better as the series goes on. Like I feel like she's keeps getting a little bit better with her acting and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, and Steve Martin of course is good too, but Martin Short's character is my favorite. He's something else in this show. So yeah, I definitely recommend, if you haven't seen the 3rd season or if you haven't seen the series at all, it's definitely absolutely worth watching. If anything, it is a fun watch, and it's also a good show. And I know sometimes when somebody says, "Well, it's fun," then you know they're like, "Well, it's not good, but it's fun."
Yeah.
But it's also good. It's also good. Trust me, it really is.
I've heard those. Yeah, Amazon or
Hulu actually.
Hulu. For this that's one. Right. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And I loved the way they ended the season finale, even though I kind of saw it coming. Mm-hmm. I predicted it by. But you know, each season kind of ends, and this isn't ruining anything, but each season ends with another person going down to set up a possible next season. So I liked how they tied it up and ended this season. I was very, very, very happy and satisfied with a third season of Only Murders in the Building. And that's great. Like when you can get through three seasons and a fan is still absolutely satisfied with the level of what it brings. And it hasn't lost its inertia at all yet.
Nice. So that's impressive. Yeah. You can go some more there.
Another good show is Winning Time. So Winning Time is about the Lakers dynasty and Magic, and it really focuses a lot about Magic on Magic Johnson. It also focuses some on the coaches as well, but Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is also a pretty good big part of the show. All the actors and do a pretty damn good job in this. There's some big names if you read through the cast that portray the Lakers in the show.
John C. Reilly, Adrian Brody. Mm-hmm.
And it's, I was almost like taken back in shock because the second part, they call it part two, which is really kind of a second and final season, but this is almost like one continuous season. Like it almost like it just starts and it's almost like you feel like you never left.
Okay.
Wow. Like that's how fluid.
You mean from the first season.
Fluid this thing flows into the second part, which it's, I was really impressed with how well things just kept flowing.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you haven't watched part one, you could watch this thing all the way through and there's really no breaks or catches or anything. It is just like, it's one big, very interesting story. It's done pretty well. And, you know, and it's dramatized, it's cinematized. It's not going to be exactly what really happened, but it captures the essence of the beginning of the dynasty, but it's also there to entertain you. So you have to keep that in mind. So,
yeah.
But for basketball fans or John C. Reilly fans or any of that stuff, I think the show was fantastic.
I've only heard good things about this show. Yeah, from people who aren't necessarily into sports, really.
Yeah, and you don't need to be a basketball fan to watch this because basketball is the background, but it's not. It's not the show.
Here's a show similar, not similar to Winning Time, but just like in the respect that you don't have to be a sports fan to enjoy it. Is The League? I think I brought this up to you before, and you've not watched it, right?
But no, I haven't yet.
You would love it.
I know.
it's so funny. But the shows should be that way. It should to be like, it could be about a basketball, you know, Winning Time is about, you know, the Lakers, but it should be about the drama and every, you know, and there should be entertainment value, to bring as many people in to enjoy it. You know, let me do one more here before I give you more room there. I had brought this up a couple episodes back. It's Skybound. Skybound is Robert Kirkman's imprint at Image Comics. Robert Kirkman, the creator of The Walking Dead. He's got the licensing rights, I guess, the comic book licensing rights to the Transformers and G.I. Joe. And I've been collecting the Transformers comics. I spoke about it on the podcast recently. But I got the first and second issue. Those are the only two issues out right now. The second issue was just as good as the first issue. And it's essentially the Transformers cartoon in comic book form. It's the Transformers cartoon that I imagined growing up. Like whatever deficiencies the cartoon had and my 8-year-old brain would make up, like fill in those deficiencies. This comic book is that, and it's got some violence in there that's pretty shocking, not gratuitous and grotesque, but just like holy shit, yes, yeah, that's if Transformers really existed in our world, and there's a evil sect of them, you know, an evil side of the warring factions. Then there'd be humans getting stomped on or, you know, being attacked by these giant robots. And there's some of that in this comic. It's not entirely that, though. It's not entirely violence. And, you know, because Robert Kirkman is known for some like crazy violence in his Walking Dead comics. That's not what this is. This is Transformers comic the way it should be done. And it's the author, the artist and the writer is Daniel Warren Johnson, who I've talked about on this podcast over the years. Turns out Daniel Warren Johnson's from Illinois. I think he's from the Chicago area.
Okay.
So he's a local native Illinoisan. And he's great because he's got really infectious energy in his art style. And but he also brings tons of heart into his story. So, like I said, there's some violence in the story, but he always brings really heartfelt moments in his comics. In a comic about giant robots, like he'll mm-hmm. have something that'll pull on your heartstrings. And this is fantastic. I'm enjoying the shit out of it. Again, it's like, are they making this shit for me specifically? And it's got to be because people my age are out there making this content. And they have my, you know, similar sensibilities that I have. So that's Skybound, Image Comics, Transformers number 1 and number 2 are out. I've got the physical copies, but you can find them on digital platforms and stuff like that. So, yeah, shout out to Dana Warren Johnson. Great comic book creator, and good for him that he's probably making bank on this, because I think the Transformer, the first issue last month was like the number one selling comic above Marvel and DC and everything else. So kudos to Image Comics and Robert Kirkman and everybody involved. All right, man, I'll let you jump
in. Yeah, no problem. We've done TV, we've done movies, we've done comics.
Music there.
Let's do a music recommendation.
Yeah.
So this is vicariously kind of through Matt, who pretty much works all the mornings that we record now. So Matt introduced me to this band because he thought I would like this band, and he was 100% correct. So this band's called Sleep Token. I don't think I brought this up.
That's
on
a
the
cool
podcast.
Name. Yeah.
Sleep Token is a very hard to describe band. The best way, okay, so here, let's, the best way I could do it. Imagine if Florence and the Machine was sung by a guy just as well, but the backing band was metal and Deftones fans.
Oh, wow.
Cool. That's cool. About, they're very unique sounding. Progressive metal is where you could umbrella them under.
Yeah.
But they're, so if you're a Tool fan, mm-hmm. This is a band probably to check out. I think they have tendencies to be a little more slower, and the singer has actually got some singing chops, like some real, and I'm not saying that the Tool doesn't, but I'm saying like the singer is like he can sing. It's pretty impressive, actually. Almost like it's like almost like an R&B singer behind a metal band in a way.
Huh,
it's very interesting. They're very, very unique. They do get hard at times, but they also get slow and melodic a lot too.
Okay.
And their songs aren't simple structured. They evolve. They have a lot of evolution to them as well, which I really like in anything that is metal derived or has metal influences. I really like songs that you know, don't sound the same throughout. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that have a lot of evolution and especially ones that bring in a lot, even it could be pop influences or anything else that bring in different melodic influences and give different tastes,
mm-hmm.
Rather than just straight up just riffing hard on a guitar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, these guys are very good. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see these guys break at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know if their style of music is appealing for everyone,
mm-hmm.
but the talent is definitely there. So I'll be interested to see where these guys go.
End up, yeah.
Yeah.
It's to your point about just their diversity in sound. They have been categorized under many different genres, including alternative metal, post-rock metal, progressive metal, and indie rock and pop.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's quite the stew of genre influences there. It's a British rock. Okay.
Yeah, they're from London, I think, right?
Hell yeah. Yeah, it's my favorite music comes from.
Very interesting. And then have you seen the picture of the lead singer?
Yeah.
He's got like a metal getup, yeah, with a mask and the whole bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. This is the first I've heard of these guys. So, interesting.
I've been sporadically watching some of the episodes of the movies that made us on Netflix. And this, I don't hear this talked about a lot, but if you're a movie fan, these are really interesting episodes. Like they really dive into how these movies were conceptualized in the first place. And then kind of they go through like their development and how the people that were involved got on board, and then the actual production and then filming of the show. One of the recent ones I watched was Back to the Future. I had no idea that Michael J. Fox was not the original cast.
Oh, for yeah. Marty McFly. Eric Stoltz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they go into the kind of the mess that was, because they started filming Back to the Future with someone else.
Yeah.
And I think they even said sometimes if you see backs of the heads and stuff, certain things, they think certain.
Yeah.
Like there was one scene, I think, in the diner, I think where, I can't remember if he punches a guy or takes up, I can't remember, but they think that it's still Eric Stoltz, shot they use.
Yeah.
Which is super interesting.
What's the name of the show that you're talking about, though? It's
the movies that made us. Yeah.
Yeah, so the Netflix thing. Yeah. Okay, yeah. No, Michael J. Fox was filming Family Ties at the time, and he'd just become like a big star from that show, and then was starting to make, and they got him in for Back to the Future, and he was working those two jobs
simultaneously
and losing all kinds of sleep over it.
Yeah. So they would film Back to the Future at night
when
he wasn't
filming.
And I guess he would like kind of sleep in cars going back and forth to sets and stuff like that. Yeah, he was doing two things. He was doing both those at one time. It was impressive.
But
they think they have, I think in October they dropped some like Friday the 13th, some horror movies too.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, they're short. They're usually, I don't know, somewhere between 30 and 60 minutes. And they really dive into a lot. And it's worth just going on there and seeing like if any of your movies that you really like are on there, because I think they're worth watching, because I think you can definitely learn something. They're very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I like learning shit like that, especially movies that you really enjoyed growing up. The one last recommendation I have that I thought maybe we both shared is Monarch: Legacy of Monsters on Apple TV.
I haven't started it yet.
Have you been seeing the reviews for this shit?
They're super good.
Yeah, it's insane. Again, I guess that's the theme of this episode, is like, hey, here's all the cool shit they made for me specifically.
I need to get back to Apple TV because my list of stuff I want to try keeps growing.
Yeah.
Because Idris Elba has that Hijack show now that I kind of want to try. I want to try the Monarch show. I want to also Lessons in Chemistry. I thought about watching that.
I heard that's good as well.
Yeah, because I've watched like 20 minutes here and there with my wife, and I'm like, I kind of like this enough. I kind of want to watch it myself instead of keep watching these little 20-minute spans where I don't know exactly what's going on. I need to stop that. And then just watch it if I'm going to watch it. So
I watched the first episode. I haven't subscribed yet to my, because that's the cool thing about Apple TV, is they have all their TV shows. The first episodes are free without a subscription, just to kind of get you, you know, hook you to join in on the streaming service. It's fucking insane. A show like this has no business being as good as it is. Like it's a show about the people, you know, the humans in a Godzilla movie, which are usually the least interesting part of a Godzilla movie, is the humans.
They're like background.
Yeah, they're background. This show is about them, but it's a good show.
Okay.
It's got I watched the first episode. I haven't watched it. It jumps around in time, like you know, it starts out with John Goodman on Skull Island from the Skull Island movie, the King Kong movie. That's part of this universe. And then it jumps to when he was younger, but then it also has Wyatt Russell playing a young Kurt Russell.
Okay.
You see him in the first episode, and I guess in the second episode, which I've not watched yet, then you see him aged as Kurt, like Kurt Russell and Wyatt Russell are playing the same character, just in, you know, an older and younger version. It's about the secret organization that's like tracking the Titans, I guess. So Godzilla and Kong and all the other monsters that inhabit this world and stuff like that. And it's got a very kind of like, it's got a little elements of X-Files in there.
Okay.
Stuff like that.
I'll move that up on my list so we can talk about that more.
Yeah.
And then also Invincible's back, so we'll be talking about that soon.
I was wondering, because that's also, I brought up Robert Kirkman earlier with the Transformers and some of the other stuff and Walking Dead. But Robert Kirkman is the creator of Invincible, and man, he's just got he's got a golden touch, dude. Like he knows. I mean, obviously he doesn't know. These are all just risks that he's taking.
Right,
but
right.
Man, they're paying off. That Invincible show, that first season was fantastic, and did well enough that they're making a second season. And yeah, good for him. So Monarch Legacy of Monsters is on Apple TV. I am going to be watching that, the rest of the series. I wasn't too sure about it early on because, the premise is like, the humans in the fucking Godzilla universe. Like, I'm not that excited about it. But this is, I kept seeing the reviews and the buzz for it. And I was like, oh, shit, I'm going to have to give this a try. The special effects, you see God's in this first episode, you see Godzilla once in a flashback, and then you see some other creatures here and there, but they're not all over that first episode. But when you do see him, when you do see the monsters, the CG is really good.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a turn off. Like you're like, oh, that looks like very TV. You know,
they go back to the guy in the suit.
Yeah, right. And speaking of Godzilla, did you have anything else for Crossing the Streams before we...
No, I think we can. When we get back, because I need All the Light We Cannot See. I need to watch the final episode, so I'll save that until I've seen the whole thing.
Cool.
That's on Netflix, a World War II piece that's based on a novel.
Yeah. Cool. So, the Monarch Legacy of Monsters is a recommendation I have. It kind of ties into... bringing up stuff for the rest of the year. There's Godzilla Minus One that I'm fucking super stoked for. It's also getting crazy good reviews. It's insane that the Godzilla universe stuff, the legendary produced American Godzilla stuff is doing so well. And then this Godzilla Minus One's Japanese production, Toho movie coming out, that looks like it's gonna be getting a lot of acclaim. And then not only is this all happening within the like Monarch Legacy of Monsters just came out this week,
mm-hmm.
Godzilla Minus One drops in theaters next week, and they're also talking about the Godzilla versus Kong move, the sequel that comes out in April of next year.
This is all kind of almost happening parallel with each other.
All of it, like, and the trailer for that is supposed to drop any day now. So it's all just happening. It's crazy that, remember that dark universe that Tom Cruise with the Mummy, and they were gonna make more. And then it just fell flat, like right away, like at its inception.
And they really, you know, they really could have done something with that if they just would have done a little better job.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. But the Godzilla Kong stuff, like, who would have thought that this cinematic universe would be thriving and that one didn't? Because these Godzilla movies and it'll have some stars in it, but not A-list. I mean, that first movie had Bryan Cranston in it, but he's only in it for a little bit. And then, you know, and then the other movies have kind of stars in it, but not really. I'm happy that we're getting all this Godzilla stuff and that it's actually good. That's what I'm looking for. I already bought my tickets for Godzilla Minus One. It's at the beginning of December. Really excited for that. I'll be talking about that on the podcast. We'll have more movie reviews coming up on the podcast, more Crossing the Streams recommendations, and we'll be doing our 2023 wrap up where we talk about our favorite things of 2023. I'll definitely have music, and I will put a new playlist on here, the Broken Bells playlist, on our show notes here on this episode. But did you have anything else, Jason, before we close up here?
Nope.
Cool, man. Yeah, I think we did. You know, out of the stuff you recommended, man, I have to get on that only murders in the building. So that mm-hmm. sounds like something I'd really enjoy. So, and then the Daniel Tosh podcast, like definitely I'm adding. Yeah, I feel like I listen to quite a lot of comedy podcasts, but there's some really good ones out there. That one I brought up last episode with Mark Norman and Sam Morrell.
Yep.
It's We Might Be Drunk. That's a really good one. And they have guests on there that are just comedians that they know. The last one I listened to had what's the Australia Jim Jefferies, Canadian Australian comedian. He was on there. That was a really good episode. But I like the Daniel Tosh thing where I'm sure he'll have comedians on there, but he doesn't, like, he's already set the precedent that he can just have anybody
right,
on his podcast and make something of it. I think that's a great idea. And he's, yeah, Daniel Tosh is fantastic. He's one of the greats. So, yeah, we'll be coming back with a lot more recommendations here on the podcast. I think we'll call it an episode. I did, speaking of comedians, I did go to a open mic this past weekend here in town at a coffee shop called The Wakery. And The Wakery, it's a non-alcoholic kind of situation there. It's a coffee shop, but they stay open till 1, and it's a coffee shop surrounded by all the bars downtown, mm-hmm. but it's the alternative to going to, a bar. They'll have stuff there. They had a bunch of comedians there that night, varying degrees of like amateur to this guy's pretty good.
Right.
An eclectic group. And I really enjoyed myself. I did run into the guy hosting it at Hy-Vee the other day. I was like, holy shit, there's that guy that was like, you know, he was really funny. And I'm going to reach out to him. I'd love to have some comedians on this podcast. And
if you go to an occasional open mics in the Springfield, Illinois area, you might actually see JJ from the List of Possible podcast.
Oh, yeah.
He does stand up.
Yeah.
Open mic stand ups here and there.
Yeah. That's some brave shit. You know, even if you are funny, like, I still think it takes some amount of like bravery to get up there. Cause, I'd love to do it, but I know.
it's an art form for sure.
Yeah. It definitely is. And it was cool that they were the Wakery was hosting this. And so I wanted to bring that up because that's one of the things I enjoy the most. It's comedy, stand up, comedy podcasts. I listen to Workaholics, their podcast, the guys that did the Workaholics. They have a podcast called This Is Important. I listen to every episode of that, and it's always funny. We'll definitely come back with some more recommendations. So,
yep.
Alrighty. So, for all things Mind Grenade, like a feed of the podcast, my art gallery, they can all be found at mindgrenadestudios.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. This has been Hector for Jason and Huey Lewis and the news, saying so long, and we'll talk to you soon.